way that we're taught it works.
Okay, what's your understanding about the way we're taught how it works?
We're taught essentially the Mandel Morgan model of neo-Darwinism, right? Survival of the fittest, at genes, random mutate in the species from a common ancestor, evolve through that process, and random mutation selects for acquired characteristics, right?
Okay, so I need to figure out if we're just having a nuanced conversation about how speciation happens or if evolution is false. So do you think that life shares a common ancestor going back billions of years?
Yes.
Okay.
But I think my major contention is the concept of the origin of species itself, in mainly in the gene-centered paradigm of evolution.
Sure, like that new species come about through random genetic change or whatever.
I don't think that that's how it works, no.
Okay, how do you think it... I think it can happen. I don't want to say this. I mean, I'm not married to the idea that that is how it happens. But at the same time, I wouldn't be able to give you an example of how one species could become another without changes in the genetics. I mean, sometimes weird things, like behavioral things make it so they don't interact anymore, even though their genes, like we know there are species whose genes are compatible, but they don't live in the same place, or their behaviors are so different that they never reproduce, and therefore they're technically different species. But anyways, go ahead.
Well, here's my contention is twofold. One, I don't believe that there's any evidence in living nature that gradualism exists. There's no such thing as species gradually transforming into another in the fossil record or otherwise. And there's no actual, what we consider a gene, nuclear DNA explicitly, does not satisfy the criteria of what a gene is. I actually don't believe there's any such thing as a gene. I think it's a metaphysical concept.
Trying to remember his name. It wasn't Morgan. It was, he won a Nobel Prize. And I remember when he won his
Lamarck?
No, Lamarck didn't win a Nobel Prize. No, he was one of the early genetic researchers. I think it was Avery or Chase. He said, I don't know if genes really do exist, but, I don't know, so on and so forth. So are you aware of the concept of ring species?
Ring species, R-I-N-G?
Yeah.
No, what is that?
So when you said, I don't see evidence for gradualism, I mean, in the fossil record, I kind of agree, but that's because the vast majority of things don't fossilize. That would be the main problem with that. But ring species are one of the best known, the two best known examples are salamanders in California, and then there's this type of Arctic bird. Well, it's not necessarily Arctic, but it lives pretty high up in the northern hemisphere. I don't remember what kind of bird it is, but we find that they kind of migrate around the Earth. They have these east-west migrations. What we find is if you start kind of like in the UK-ish, the subspecies of this bird are genetically compatible. They can crossbreed across a set lateral horizontal distance. And then, so like A is compatible with B. B is compatible with C, another species that lives even farther away. C is compatible with D. That actually, for this particular species, they're actually found all around the globe. But when you get to, I don't know what it actually is, but like, let's just say we get all the way to Z.
At the end of the species A and Z tree, right, you're going to say that like Z doesn't crossbreed with species B, right?
A. Yeah, Z and A are not. Every step along the way, they are, but at this one, they're not. So I think that that is strong supporting evidence of this sort of gradualism.
Well, aren't you referring to different species still?
I believe there's subspecies.
What's the differentiates between subspecies and different species? If not the ability to breed with each other, how would that not disqualify something from being a subspecies, not a distinct different species itself?
So the like whether or not we want to call it species or subspecies is kind of just a, how do I want to say it? It's kind of just a preference, like
arbitrary.
A little bit, like in a, in America, there are hundreds of species of pigeon, but they're all they're all able to crossbreed. So we could call them subspecies.
Well, it's similar to like dogs and wolves, right? You can make an argument that dogs are the same species as wolf, but like the, you know.
Yeah.
I'm making them. I don't know if you've understood my claim necessarily, though. Is that what you would consider gradualism doesn't exist in living nature, and therefore, like, there is no evidence that these so-called the agent of gradualism, these kind of random mutations, are one, in fact, random, and B, actually do lead to a distinct and different species over time. I think species emerge based on the conditions of life that they generate from, essentially. I think of a similar process with like DNA. When I say DNA or genes are a metaphysical concept, I'm merely saying, and I think this is actually pretty broadly recognized, is that there is no substance, a unit of heredity, that even DNA does not constitute a single unit of heredity that can be descriptive of all of the intricacies and characteristics of the species, but rather it's a part or a slice of the, of a broader concept that is heredity, and that which actually generates the acquired characteristics necessary for speciation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think I disagree with that. I mean, we do know that there are traits, though, that have a one-to-one correspondence with a particular gene. Like, there is a gene and only a gene that controls for, I mean, like, for the pea plants, that's pretty simple. Like, the color of the flowers or whether the pods are smooth or wrinkled. Those were not polygenic traits. They were single gene traits. So,
well, I mean,
I agree.
If you're talking about Mendel's little Punnett squares, then haven't those been disproven as mere correlation and not necessarily discrete causation? Isn't that broadly understood?
I don't know. I don't know what you mean by that.
Mendel's little Punnett squares that were talked about in biology, like those aren't. That's not a scientific. That doesn't constitute like actual science. That is. Those are conveniences that aren't descriptive for the cause of those changes.
No, they don't describe the DNA in there at all. But what they do is, all I'm talking about is that
How does DNA constitute a gene? Just how does it do that? Because it encodes for proteins that sometimes align directly with some things. I would say that's a pretty bad categorization.
I don't know what you mean by that. There are traits.
If it only allies sometimes discreetly, then isn't it not appropriate to consider that a unit of heredity or a gene?
I don't think so, because just because a gene can be sometimes a gene can have multiple effects in the organism. That word is escaping me right now. And most traits are polygenic. I don't think that means that.
What does that mean, polygenic? It just means that you don't understand the underlying cause, right?
No, we do understand.
It can be
the
attributed
cause
to various segments of DNA.
Yes,
What is the cause? Polygenic. What generates the DNA in the beginning?
In the beginning of what?
Yeah, but don't you see how you're diffusing the discrete behaviors across different sections of the so-called gene?
I have no idea what's going on at this point. Human height, we've done studies on things
like
this.
I don't think you fully understood
this argument. You really need to stop interrupting me. Human height, for example, has been extensively studied, and we know that there isn't a gene for human height. We know that the most significant gene, there are over 200 genes that contribute to human height, And the one that has the greatest statistical significance only accounts for like a fraction of an inch in height between people. But the idea that it's not caused by DNA being expressed in cells causing the organism to develop is completely false. We know for a fact that's what guides human development and shapes height. Now it can be messed with by environmental factors like diet, for example, but that doesn't mean that it's not caused by gene expression.
Well, how do you know that the very same metabolism that affects the gene expression at the level past which it is already codified in the amino acids of DNA itself has not already been altered through some sort of metabolic process in the pre-genesis of the DNA structure?
None of that was trackable. Literally none of that was trackable.
DNA is a slice. Okay, well, what wasn't trackable? I'll explain it.
Absolutely none of that
was
trackable.
You're admitting that there are environmental factors, right, that alter the so-called DNA sequence that changes its expression.
That's not what I said. That is true, but that's not what I said. What I said was it can affect the
expression. Right?
You got to stop doing that. What I said was it can modify the expression of those genes. Like a bullet in the head stops the expression of genes as well. Therefore, genes don't exist. It's actually all just bullets. No,
I'm saying that what creates the gene? Is the gene an eternal immutable substance?
Buddy, I don't want to have a meta conversation about from whence cometh biology. That's completely unproductive. For some people doing some things, maybe it is. But if we're just trying to figure out what is or is not closest to a true description of nature itself, metaphysics is not true descriptions of nature. It just isn't. These are like whatever you want to call them, second order knowledge questions about from whence cometh blah blah blah.
The genesis of DNA be a second order?
Because you're trying to say the way you said it was so woo and abstract that it's like your question could have been interpreted as
saying, what is the
your question could have been interpreted as, oh, but we don't have an accounting for abiogenesis. Or it could have been, but we don't have an accounting for where the DNA molecule itself came from. Or it could have been a question on, oh, we don't have an account for what actually causes the emerging characteristics from genes. Like, you're saying words, but you're not saying
engaging
anything.
Engaging in reductionism. You're engaging in an ideological reductionist
argument. In the spirit of the scientific method, right? Yes, that's what I'm doing, because that's what's useful.
Yeah, yeah. So you think science is reducing it to its smallest element and then expressing it from there. I'm saying that very paradigm lends itself to a kind of pure substance of heredity that is a metaphysical concept that doesn't adequately describe nature.
Okay, what does it fail to do?
It fails to describe concretely the process in which characteristics are acquired.
Where's the failure? Organisms inherit DNA. DNA is the hereditary molecule. I don't see the failure anywhere in here.
By not understanding fully the process in which DNA is expressed, formulated, and how it interacts in a dialectic with its environment is a profound and fundamental misunderstanding.
What is being misunderstood? We actually know so many things about human characteristics and what genes correspond to those characteristics. There are uncertainties that we don't 100% understand about how the environment shapes it, but we don't not know that the vast majority of human traits are influenced directly by genes. For example, we have identical twin studies. Identical twins who have been separated from birth, who have never met each other, have the same DNA, but share nothing in their environment, yet those identical twins on average are vastly more similar to each other than they are to anybody in their environment, including their adoptive brothers and sisters and the parents that raised them. We know for a fact, with not the highest resolution, that DNA, we know for a fact, but with not the highest resolution, that DNA unequivocally shapes even sort of like abstract things or things you wouldn't think there's a DNA correspondence to, like personality traits, for example. So go on.
Or certain things that are hereditary, like heart conditions, which is the actual genesis of the field of epigenetics itself, which arose from twins, these very same twin studies that showed that certain things that they thought were 100% hereditable, like certain heart conditions, were actually expressed differently in these identical twins, which share an identical genetic code, therefore forcing them to make a subfield of genetics called epigenetics, in which case the environment and certain other factors lead to different gene expressions, right? So this is a somewhat of a paradigm shift, is it not?
A little bit. I mean, the modern synthesis takes into account, I don't know to what extent it takes that into account, but yeah. And biologists aren't satisfied with where we're at.
You're giving a lot of credit to this kind of empiricist, scientific Anglo-Saxon method that we have now. I'm saying that that does a good job of describing some things, but ultimately the picture is unclear. Much similar to like Newtonian physics pre-Einstein, right? That it does a good job of describing things, but not at small levels and not in certain relative conditions. I'm saying a similar paradigm shift is probably on the horizon with the paradigm of genetics, which would radically change the way that we understand the expression of certain characteristics and of heredity itself. I'm saying that it is a more dialectic process than simply a reduction expression, you know? Does that make sense? I feel like you're not understanding my point at all.
Well, that's because you're trying to out-vocabulary me, it sounds like. I agree that the environment modifies the way genes are expressed, but I do not agree that you inherit the environment.
Okay, great. How does it do that?
How does
it do that, though? Like, why does the environment change the expression? What
why or how
to the, like, what alters the code, so to speak?
Changes in the environment, which at the cellular level, now we have to magic school bus our way down to the cellular level and think about things in terms of what do molecules care about, such as the pH of things or the availability of critical nutrients or whatever. But we can simplify it way more than that, and we can say that sometimes the environment can trigger either methylation of the DNA molecule, or I always forget what the hell the opposite of methylation is, but it either binds together sections of the chromatin or opens them up. Again, I always forget what the opposite of the methylation is, but we understand that the environment, I just told you. And if we wanted to be hyper specific about
it, what in the environment?
The temperature, the availability of micronutrients.
So this is all kinds of things. Purely?
So, for example, there are some animals.
It's dialectic. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
That nature operates in a constant form of change of quantity into quality, right? And that doesn't
that
stop
was
at
a
DNA.
Completely
DNA
meaningless
is susceptible
statement.
To the same things. You don't think that's dialectics of nature is completely meaningless?
No, what you said, oh, it goes from a quantitative to a qualitative state or whatever.
That is literally the process in which nature is undergoing all the time, constantly, is it not? Isn't that just what chemistry is, measuring that change of quantity to quantity?
That doesn't mean anything. A chemical reaction happens. Therefore, quantity is turning
yes,
into
it does.
Quality.
It means that
then what does it things- mean? Tell me, what is the quantitative thing? What is the qualitative thing?
The quantitative thing is the very things you talked about in terms of temperature, in terms of variable resources. The qualitative thing is the organism itself taking on a different qualitative form.
Sure. How is that not quantitative? We can quantify the effects of
because
those
it's a different
quantitative things.
Different
have.
Species, different organisms have a different quality. It's a different fundamental quality. Would you argue that a bacteria is different from like an insect? A tree is different qualitatively from a spider.
This
these are the qualitative changes.
This was not your argument.
I thought this would be common knowledge. I'm explaining something very simple to you. science is the study of quantitative change into qualitative change, and that is constantly happening all the time. There is no stasis in living nature.
That's what shifting from quantitative to qualitative means, that there is no stasis in nature.
No, I'm saying that is a constant dialectical process that is undergoing in all things at all times, that there is no stasis in nature. And that DNA, like all things in living nature, undergoes and is subject to the very same dialectical processes.
If life is part of nature, then it's subject to the rules and laws that govern nature. But assigning vocabulary terms to things in the universe.
Of genes.
What?
I'm saying that very understanding, that very basic understanding of like of physical nature, of nature in reality, the dialectics of nature, is ideologically inconsistent with the idea of genes as DNA. DNA as an eternal substance. This is a static thing.
Again,
that
eternal
is immutable
substance.
And that is discrete in their terms.
Now you're just saying weird shit. DNA is an eternal substance. Nobody claims that, nor does that have anything to do with do mutations in DNA cause differences in phenotypes of organisms?
Mutations do, but mutations are not random, and they're subject to the process in which the organism or the environment in which the organism exists. For example, isn't that what's demonstrated in Gould's punctuated equilibrium?
I wasn't paying attention to anything you said.
Isn't the non-random mutations of genetics, of genes, of DNA, isn't that firmly established in Gould's punctuated equilibrium?
No. Do you know what punctuated equilibrium
is
and how Gould came up with the with the term?
Yes, I'm familiar.
Go ahead.
Okay. Radical changes in the environment produce a accelerated speciation that does not adequately describe the processes you would come to understand Darwinian evolution would have enough time to establish or generate. Simply a swifter evolutionary timescale punctuated by environmental changes. Massive environmental changes create more speciation. That implies a very discrete relationship from the environment to the actual form of the organism itself, and not a form of gradualism or a purely survival of the fittest random mutation selection to describe speciation.
We're on the right track, but you invoked DNA, and none of Gould's studies had to do with DNA. Gould also does not deny that Darwinian evolution takes place.
That's an incredibly myopic...
Gould did not deny that Darwinian evolution takes place. He also didn't deny, he didn't really deny gradualism per se. He just says that what we see in the fossil record is indicative of long periods of stasis, and then because of, and I think you did an okay job of describing this, if the environment's not changing, then there isn't selective pressure for organisms to adapt, although opening up new niches is always a possibility that they can exploit. But when the environment changes in subtle or dramatic ways, then there is a lot of selective pressure for organisms to change rapidly. And so they do, and that may be a pretty good description of why the fossil record looks the way it does. And they particularly did a lot of their studies by looking at ammonites. I'm going to have you talk to an actual scientist that studies DNA about this, because you're galaxy braining me and she's a lot smarter than I am. So I will be here, but oh no. Did In Silico Biology leave? She might have. Oh no. I waited too long to bring her up, I think. Okay, well,
I think Dr. Cope wants to come on and yell at me about
if
this.
If she comes back. Dr. Cope?
Are you familiar with the work of Mitrin or Lysenko from Russia and the Soviet Union?
Yeah, they were. I've never heard of that first person, but Lysenko was completely wrong about everything, and that's why a huge reason why they had catastrophic famines and millions of people starved to death, because they rejected Darwinian principles of Darwinian evolution in favor of their very odd quasi-religious socialist collectivist version of what they thought life was like. And what they did was they crammed lots of different crops together, and they said, ooh, they're going to absorb each other's characteristics because collectivism, socialism, and communism is true. Everything else is bad, especially ideas that came from Westerners like evolution. And guess what? Millions of people died because that didn't work.
Okay, well, that is not true. Anything
that's
that you said,
100% the
literally
case.
Not,
that's, okay,
ever,
so you're
have you
okay.
Ever, have you ever?
I now know that you're a very unserious troll. So Cope is just going to describe what he came in to describe, and then maybe we'll move on. Go ahead.
I definitely appreciate it. Not be brief. And everything you described is 100% true. Happened in Soviet Russia, and it actually led to mass starvation in Soviet Russia. So that's 100% true.
Yeah.
You need to read a book, bro.
I've actually read Lysenko.
It's okay. We're gonna get there. I'm gonna help you out. I got you. Don't even worry about it.
He's not even here anymore.
Oh, did he run?
No, I kicked him out. But please describe what you were going to describe, because that'll be instructive and useful, anyways. But I'm not dealing with that idiot anymore. Well, he seemed pretty smart, but he was just
wrong. Man, I wanted to talk with him, man. Oh, please bring him up. I will describe him, but please, man. Oh my God, it was so good. Please, he's so stupid. It's so great.
Okay, we'll see.
Fair enough. What I was gonna say was, when he said so many wrong things. Obviously, genes exist. We know that genes exist. That's what Gregor Mendel's experiments were about, and that's how he came up with the three laws of Mendelian genetics, right? Independent assortment, dominance, and law of inheritance. And so we use that to predict Mendelian diseases like sickle cell disease, for example. If you have two disease alleles in trans, meaning that you have one on your mom's allele, one on your dad's allele, there's a 100% chance, that virtually 100% chance, you will have sickle cell disease. There's no debate about that, right? We can use neo-Darwinian evolution, and we do use neo-Darwinian evolution to predict disease. It's not even like a debate. So if somebody comes up here and says that genes aren't real, that doesn't make any sense. You're talking about a $1 trillion conglomerate industry. When you talk about like diagnostics and medications and gene therapy, what do you think? People are just making stuff up? You think people are just making trillions of dollars a year, billions of dollars a year, just making up stuff? I mean, I'm glad you brought him back. Oh, I'm so good. Oh, this is going to be.
Okay. I'm not saying DNA doesn't exist. Oh. I'm not denying microbiology.
That's what you said.
I'm simply saying that
you
nothing
say that. You
constitutes
told him, I was
a unit of heredity.
You told this man just now, 5 minutes ago, on this call, that genes did not exist. They existed in a state of flux, whatever bullshit you said. That's what
I'm saying.
Said.
Nature, living nature, exists in a constant state of change. There's no such thing as natural stasis. No.
Great. I got you. Let me ask you a question. Can you delineate right now, without Googling it, the difference between classical Darwinian evolution and neo-Darwinian evolution right now, without Googling it, please? Right now?
Doesn't neo-Darwinian evolution emerge from the germ soma articulation?
Can you just, are you asking me or telling me?
I'm not sure. I was assuming under the assumption that it was when they delineated between the germ and the soma.
What is that? What do you think that means?
That there, the somatic substance is the immutable substance of heredity itself, and the germ is the fertile soil.
What? No, somatic cells are the cells of your body. Germ cells are sperm and egg cells, right. Or pollen.
I'm referring
and egg cells.
To the.
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah, dude. I'm referring to the paradigm.
Excuse me, sir.
No, you're just trying to sound photosynthesis.
Right.
What do you mean photosynthesis? What does that mean?
Like literally, it's a paradigm thing. You wouldn't get it.
When Charles Darwin came up with his theory of evolution, they didn't even know that genes existed. Charles Darwin studied.
They didn't know DNA existed. Yeah.
Excuse me, as a lad, you got to stop cutting me off. Lamarck's theory of evolution was taught to Charles Darwin, and he went to the Galapagos Islands, and he actually discovered his version of evolution, which ended up being correct, and we know that it's correct. Because when Gregor Mendel came up with the idea of a transmutable element that could transfer phenotypes in his experiments with pea plants, he showed that genes actually control phenotype, which is how we now have neo-Darwinian evolution.
But Mendel didn't know what DNA was either.
You don't have to come in here and just bullshit. If you don't know what you're talking about, you can just be quiet. You know,
Mendel didn't know what DNA was because of what.
Nor is that relevant. Like, F equals MA is true. It was true when Newton wrote Principia. It's still true today, even though Newton didn't know about general relativity.
You guys are getting very hung up on the idea that I am somehow rejecting microbiology. I'm merely saying that nothing constitutes a single unit
hold on,
of heredity.
Hold on. I don't have a lot of time. I got one more question for you. I don't have a lot of time. So let me ask you this. Can you explain to me how retroviruses work? So explain.
No,
to me
I can't.
How...
I'm not a biologist.
Oh, okay, great. I am. Let me ask you a question. So chimpanzees have 208 integrations of retroviruses that randomly integrate into the genome. 208.
Well, he believes
humans
in evolution.
Humans have 211, and the 211 are in the same location. So what's the chances of that happening? What's the
very
chances
small.
Of those two things? Hold on, guys, stop cutting me off, bro. I don't want
you ask me a question.
No, it's you can ask when I'm complete.
Well, hold on. I'm gonna moderate. So Cope, Conch, I don't know how to say it, believes in evolution. He believes in universal common ancestor and all that stuff. So you guys can unmute whenever you want.
No, Roger, no, I appreciate that. The point that I'm making is that it's a slippery slope argument. He's taking the concepts that we know and use in biology daily to predict and cure disease, and he's trying to say that they don't exist. He's trying to say that genes don't exist. He's trying to say that, and they want to make a difference between macro and microevolution. There's no difference between the two things. Trait is selected for genetically, and those individuals have a higher allele frequency because it gives them an advantage in their environment. Guess what? It's evolutionary. It's okay. It's it's not anything to get hung up over, dog.
What you refer to as a gene does not satisfy the definition of what a gene is. Simple as that.
Interesting. So what's a gene?
A gene is a unit of heredity.
Okay. And
actually, give me one second. I'll be right back. Give me one second.
That's fine.
One second.
So with the pea plants, for example, we've been able to find the sequence of DNA within them that controls for those single characteristics, which Mendel got really lucky that these weren't polygenic traits and that they were all on separate chromosomes. So we know which chromosomes they're on. We can find the individual strand of DNA for it, but you're saying that it's not a gene and it doesn't exist. Why?
I'm saying that those things describe a discrete process of like a protein at some point in the hereditary of the process of heredity that these things line up with protein creation, right? I'm not denying, again, not denying microbiology. I'm simply saying that based on the instances in which there is no very discrete encode something that you couldn't like read literally for a very specific trait, which happens in genes all the time. Like, for example, Alzheimer's. What's the gene for Alzheimer's? We tend to think that there is a linkage between what we could observe from the DNA as genetic material, but we don't we don't know enough, or it's not discrete enough where we could simply pinpoint it exactly. So it seems to be a combination of many things, environmental included. I'm simply saying that DNA that we can observe is like a slice, that there's a process of heredity that is a whole organism process. And you take a slice of that and you read the actual DNA and the sequences within that. And you're saying that because you can crudely and vulgarly adopt that into different expressions, that this constitute as all of a unit of heredity, when in reality, it's an incomplete understanding of heredity and it's only a small process. Does that make sense?
Barely.
Like, for example, GMO is failure to thrive or something, you know, along those lines. Like, it seems like you're, by doing genetic engineering a lot of times, it's injuring the organism at some level that we can't quite we don't fully understand the degree in which that injury, or even the content of what that injury is.
That's because natural selection is more clever than you are. I have like one more question. We've been going at this for like 45 minutes almost. Do you think that there are characteristics that organisms have that are 0% influenced by DNA?
I think DNA emerges from its own requirements within like life itself. So yeah, you could relate everything to a protein expression because that's how organisms take form, but it doesn't mean that that is the genesis of that. That's not, it's the root is not the DNA. The root is actually something before the DNA was encoded.
So if somebody shoots me, is it more accurate to say that the bullet killed me, the person killed me, or the invention of gunpowder killed me? Or are we just talking about nothingness nonsense at that point? Because I feel that's kind of what I think that's what you're doing.
Lamarck say, where it's like, if you cut off somebody's arm, then their offspring aren't going to not inherit an arm, right? Like, they're not going to inherit the lack of an arm.
Yeah, we know
his arm was cut off, and they have a kid. The same argument, right?
I don't think I was making that argument at all, but I agree that Lamarckism is not.
But it's
true.
The same thing. It's like, yeah, well, the obviously the person that shot you, I guess, would be the thing. It's not. Yeah. So what's your point?
My point was this. Like, I don't know what this is. This like pedantic word game of, well, the DNA exists, but if the environment changes the DNA, then there is no such thing as a gene. No, there is. Like, I can be killed by a bullet that was shot by a person. You don't go around saying that the bullet did not cause my death. You also don't go around saying the person didn't murder me because, well, if it hadn't been for the invention of gunpowder, that whole thing would have never happened anyways. Yeah, I guess that's true. But to make that argument is just to wax philosophically about nothing.
You're just saying that because DNA oftentimes relates discreetly to a specific quality of an organism, that it constitutes as a unit of heredity in itself. I'm simply saying that because there are instances in which this is not the case, that throws into question the ability for a gene to be considered a unit of heredity.
Such as
the entire field of epigenetics. What causes the gene expression to change?
It doesn't matter.
What is the
again?
What is
you're the, invoking what caused the DNA to change, not that the DNA doesn't produce phenotypic characteristics or whatever in the organisms. So that is not an argument.
It's just simply that you have reduced heredity to the strands of DNA, and you haven't gone any farther back in that process.
I'm saying
that the origin for species itself is in the separate genesis of those strands of DNA itself.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like what are they called? The pygmy mammoths on the Channel Islands off the coast of California. They wouldn't have become pygmy mammoths if they hadn't been separated from the mainland and there was selective pressure for them to reduce in size, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but it's still, if you want to understand the phenotype, it is reducible to the genotype. We don't go around saying they're, but that doesn't mean that the environment doesn't affect the genotype at the same time. Like I said, this is a conversation that doesn't really produce
plant hybridization, right? If you do a plant hybrid where you graft a branch onto another plant, that the offspring of the grafted plant will carry sequential DNA sequences that are within both the branch of that plant and also its parent that it is grafted onto. So there seems to be a two-way communication in reference to how genes are actually constituted. That would, again, lead you to believe that the gene is not the site of heredity itself, but in fact, there is something that predates the gene itself, the DNA itself.
I got my genes from my parents. My parents existed before the combination of genes I have, the particular combination that I and only I have. Yes. Therefore, what? Therefore, we can say these kinds of things, but it doesn't go anywhere beyond that. So,
yeah, I just don't think I think you're thinking of this in too myopic of a way. And I also would encourage you to read Lysenko, what he actually says, because none of what you actually said about him was correct in any way.
Why did millions of people die of starvation?
Because Russia had a famine related to the war.
What caused the famine?
Lysenko never missed a grain yield. The global war that killed a third of the Russian population.
This happened after that.
Right.
It happened in the 50s. A third of
the population. There was the collectivization. There was the rapid industrialization of Russia. It's not because of Lysenko.
The serfdomness of the harebrained and idiotic
Lysenko also didn't reject Darwin, by the way. You know that Lysenko did not reject Darwin at all, right?
Him
and Engels both contributed Darwin.
Engels. What? Anyways.
Yeah.
Okay.
Engels also did not reject Darwin in his Dialectics of Nature.
That's fine. That was in the 1800s. This famine we're discussing happened in the 50s. Like, yeah, literally biologists that espoused Darwinian evolution were assassinated by the USSR.
That's anecdotal because in the USSR at that time, a lot of the intelligentsia were remnants of the aristocratic class by the czars that were required because when the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution succeeded, that they actually needed people that had institutional awareness of like the sciences. But as the USSR progressed, they wanted to rid themselves of the bourgeois mentality in the institutions themselves. So it's not because they were so-called Darwinist, it's mostly because they had connections with the aristocratic bourgeoisie.
I can believe that also is a contributing factor. So, anyways,
I would say it is the contributing factor. It's what they say.
Sure. Anything else?
So, I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, me neither.
No, that's it.